We do investigative journalism and storytelling across the world. We train local journalists to tell their own stories, and they have to be personally connected to this story. That's what makes us different. The immersion, being transported with sound to a world that allows my imagination to go where it wants, and I don't have to use my eyes for it because I'm legally blind. I'm albino. So I try not to use my eyes as much as possible. So audio for me has become a much bigger part of my life than it was. And this is one reason I turned to podcasting and I stopped writing as much.
The good news is we've now submitted the apps to both Apple and Google in the app stores for review. So we have done all the work that's needed to get version 1.0 into the app stores. I hope, fingers crossed, it'll be this week we will have those available.
Welcome to Creators from True Fans. I'm independent podcaster Claire Waite-Brown.
And I'm Sam Sethi, the CEO of True Fans.
Each episode, we'll chat with an independent creator, whether a podcaster or musician, about their creative experiences.
And we'll answer questions from independent creators about the True Fans features that can help them with discovery, interactivity, and monetization.
We'll get interactive and see what our listeners have been saying in the comments and super comments.
And discuss what's happening in the wider world that could be of benefit to independent creators. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Sam. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good. It's lovely and warm outside. But anyway, this week, our featured podcast is On Spec. Who's On Spec?
On Spec is a documentary podcast, and it is produced by independent journalists from around the world. I interviewed Fariba about some of the stories the show has covered and how it's made. I'm here with Fariba Nawa. And let's start, please, Fariba. What is the name of your podcast and what is it all about?
On Spec Podcast is what it's called. And it's a documentary podcast from the field. We do investigative journalism and storytelling across the world. We train local journalists to tell their own stories, and they have to be personally connected to the story. That's what makes us different from other audio documentaries. So there's no farce of objectivity, but we're very fair. We fact check. We are journalists. But if you have a personal connection to the story, if it's your community you're reporting about, you have to be transparent about that and explain what your position is, basically what your bias is, if there is one. So that's what we've been doing. We launched in 2019 with a Kickstarter campaign, and now we're on our sixth season. So it's been a good run.
Can you explain a bit more then about how it works and how you get the content? Because you've explained, you know, you've got different people reporting on different stories. How does the content get chosen, decided on? And tell me a bit as well about some of the stories that have been covered on the show, please.
It was sort of trial and error. The story of On Spec is interesting to me because it is a bunch of frustrated freelance journalists based in Istanbul, which is a hub for Middle East correspondents, by the way. It's a magical city. People love living here. It's safe enough. And then you can go to Ukraine. You can go to Egypt. You can go to Lebanon from here. So there are at least 500 of us foreign journalists here, working with various media organizations, legacy media and freelancers, but a lot more freelancers nowadays because people are getting laid off from, you know, the industry's suffering right now. It's evolving. So this one American couple who've now broken up and are no longer part of the podcast, they came to me with the idea. They said, let's do a documentary podcast. And I said, guys, this is a lot of work, because I was the only one with radio experience on the team. And I was the oldest. And I said, all right, but don't saddle me with this. Don't make me do this. And 6 years down the line, I'm doing it. I'm the one who's taking charge. But they did spearhead it, and I appreciate that it came from them. And then we kind of learned along the way, because none of us really knew what podcasting was. We thought it was like radio. It's not, because I had done radio, and I had done a couple of podcast stories previously with Reveal, which is an award-winning American investigative podcast. But doing your own is a whole different ballgame. So we started out with that Kickstarter campaign to get the funds going. There were 8 of us who co-founded it. One was a photographer, one was a videographer. Many of them were print journalists, text, digital journalists, and I was radio. So we pulled together all our resources and skills, and we had about 10 languages among us. And that was a big plus. And doing like skills sharing, so we didn't have to pay for a lot of things. So translation, voiceovers, we all pitched in. It was all hands on deck. That's how it all got started. And then whatever stories we had not been able to commission, because especially, and this was what was frustrating for us, is a lot of the legacy media wanted a European angle, or especially an American angle. American media is obsessed with itself. So it was like, what's the American angle? We don't care about the story unless there's something American in there. And we were like, this is not what we want to be limited to. We want to be able to do stories that are good stories about people across the world. So that was the essence of it. And then we had to narrow it down. And eventually we did, every season had a theme. The first season was like, whoever has a story that they haven't been able to do, if you think it's good, let's do it. That's how the first season went. People had great ideas and we put it out there. And it was a Bolivian musician who traveled around the world and became a street musician in Istanbul, from Latin America to here, and how his identity was shaped by the places that he went to. That was one of less journalistic, more storytelling. We had one story from Iraq about climate change and how it was a city of garbage and what the Kurdish areas in Iraq were doing about it. Initially, it was a lot of Middle East stuff, but then it expanded in our second and third, and especially third, fourth seasons. We had a season on disinformation. So we will go to different parts of the world. With our third season on disinformation, we went to 7 different countries and we innovated. I know that's a buzzword, by profiling 2 sides on a specific issue that involved disinformation. I'll give you an example. So in Russia, it was queer rights and how queer people are treated. And our reporter who had lived in Russia, he interviewed a gay psychiatrist and a student who was basically exposed to Russian media and was anti-queer. We talked about their views on the queer community, and then we brought them together in a studio to see if they can find common ground. And that whole season was one of my favorites. The next season was called Borders, How Imaginary and Real Borders Define Us. And for that, we went to Armenia and Azerbaijan. We went to Zambia. So I trained local journalists. We work with them one-on-one, but we are not there in the field. They have to do their own reporting. For the border season, we teamed up producers with reporters so that they could help each other, because these stories are not easy stories. You need help. You need a team. And then for our last season, which was called Lethal Descent, it was a 2-year-long investigation, and I did it here in Turkey. It was about how Iran kidnaps and kills its dissidents abroad. And UK residents are familiar with this story because it's been happening there as well. So that's kind of how we do things. And it's sort of, we learn along the way.
Do you have any processes or software or tips or things that have helped you, especially with, you know, saving time?
Yeah, we are starting to delve into that. I have very mixed feelings about using AI. Even learning how to use it is problematic for me because I'm, you know, Gen X. I just like things the way they were. I personally will listen to all my audio and I will transcribe word for word, because it gives me a sense of the place and the intimacy, depending on how important the interview is. Last summer, I sat for 2 weeks just transcribing 43 pages, and I needed to do that to get a sense of the place and time again. Transcribing with AI doesn't necessarily give you that intimacy, but we're starting to, yes, use that. Sometimes we'll use Trint, which is very expensive. We work with a lot of foreign languages, and we've been using some Whisper. And I was just introduced to something called Assembly. I'm going to start using that. So yes, that is the most time-consuming thing with interviews. And then the next time-consuming thing is editing scripts. And there is no AI that's going to do the job of a script editor yet, because storytelling is an art and humans are still doing it. Thank God for that. And with Lethal Descent, which was our last season that I did, we had a fantastic editor, Ibi Caputo. She took hours looking over every word and sentence to make it as audio friendly as possible. Other than that, the technology that we use, we uploaded on Spotify. That's where we are. Our host is Spotify. And then it aggregates. It goes into other feeds and stuff. So yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not in charge of the technical side. I just do the storytelling and the editing and the hosting.
Yeah. Yeah. Understand. You've mentioned the funding, which itself must be a big job to go out and source that funding. Does the show have any other financial support?
I write a monthly newsletter, and in it, I'm always asking for donors and supporters. The seed funding that we got from Kickstarter for 1 month, our goal was to make 20,000 and we made 22. So I always go back to those folks. And the funny thing is, some of them aren't even listeners to the show. It's not their kind of show, but they want to support independent journalism. So they'll give. Others listen. There are a lot of people who listen who don't have the money. That's okay too. They help with skills sharing. Example, I put it on my Facebook. Hey, we need a voiceover, someone who speaks English with a Spanish, you know, speaking accent. And you'd be surprised how many people want to be on a podcast with their voice. But yes, funding, donors, Patreon subscribers. We have a Patreon subscription. We're just updating our website. I have a meeting after this with our website designers. And one of the things we've added are sort of creative perks for Patreon subscribers. For example, if you pay X amount of dollars, our team will share their personal family recipes with you, food recipes. We thought we'd do stuff that's a bit outside the box for that, instead of giving early episodes, or that we don't do early episodes. We work to the last minute to make it happen. So funding is definitely an issue like everyone else. And for now, I am fundraising for the sixth season. And your listeners can go to onspec.com. There's a donate banner. You can make a one-time donation, or you can become a Patreon subscriber for as little as $3 to whatever amount you want.
Brilliant. We've talked a little bit about this when we met up in London, but what frustrates you and what excites you about podcasting?
Oh, I love the immersion. When I go for a walk, what relaxes me is putting on a podcast. And I love like espionage podcasts, real life story. And so I listen to those because I want to be engaged. And I forget that I just walked an hour and a half. So the immersion, being transported with sound to a world that allows my imagination to go where it wants. And I don't have to use my eyes for it because I'm legally blind. I'm albino. So I try not to use my eyes as much as possible. So audio for me has become a much bigger part of my life than it was. And this is one reason I turned to podcasting and I stopped writing as much, because I don't have to read as much, right? And I use audiobooks. But what frustrates me about podcasting, one, the kind of podcasting we do is so expensive. And I wish it wasn't, but it is. And I wish people would understand the amount of work that we put in for the little money that we get. Because people want free content often. And I'm hearing that narrative podcasting is dying. I think it's about finding your niche. I don't think it's dying, because narrative podcasting is storytelling. How could storytelling die? It doesn't make sense to me. Everyone I speak to loves a good story. And when we did surveys, people were like, the other thing was like, should we become more geographically limited? Should we just go to the Middle East and stick? They said, no, we love that you go to around the globe. You're nodding your head, right? So
yeah,
because what matters to us is a fast-paced, engaging story with a, you know, with a narrative arc. So that's what we're going to stick to. But we're also journalists. We're not doing just random stories, right? We're holding people accountable. We're hurting, you know, speaking truth to power, if I may use that adage. Other than that, I think you and I have this in common. What frustrates me is that you have a lot of people who have huge followings, like celebrities, doing podcasts. Why? Why do celebrities need to do podcasts? I feel like podcasts was the underdog's thing, you know? The people who didn't have a voice would start a podcast and gain a voice. And now it's everybody under the sun who is famous is on the podcast bandwagon. And I just tune it out. It's like, I already know what you think and who you are. Let's give others a chance.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I want to hear the real life stories and real life people.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So now, True Fans, this is creators from True Fans, and the True Fans app is a podcasting 2.0 app. What do you know, if anything, about podcasting 2.0?
Tell me. Not me.
What we want to communicate is that there are, and I'm going to talk to you about some of the things that might be good for On Spec, particularly stuff that surrounds the audio if you want some extra. And it can help your show to be discovered. For example, if you have your transcript in the show, people can search in a podcast app for words particular to any transcript, which I think could be really useful for this show. So there are ways that the Podcasting 2.0 features can help with discovery, maybe with interactivity so that your fans can communicate with you. And there are monetization aspects as well. For example, with every show that I research for creators, when I'm listening, I stream a very small amount of money per minute to that show in TrueFans. So now for you, when you go to TrueFans and you claim your show, which is just a matter of clicking on a button and making sure you have your email address in your RSS feed, and then TrueFans can verify that that's your show. When you do that, you will be presented with a wallet, and it will have a very small amount of money in it, probably about 20p. But anybody can do that. Anybody can listen to your show on TrueFans, and other apps do it as well, and pay per minute of listening. Another thing is they can leave comments and they can attach a payment to the comment. The other thing I wondered with your show that might be useful is called recommendations. On TrueFans, it's called recommendations. On other places, it's called Podroll. Now, Spotify allows you to recommend two shows attached to your show. In TrueFans itself, you can attach any number of shows to your show as a recommendation.
Do we have to change our hosting to TrueFans? Is that
no, no, no? That's coming soon. But you do not have to do that, because you can claim your show with TrueFans. Then there's a creator's dashboard that allows you to do these extra things. Now, I host Creativity Found with Buzzsprout, and I can do all of that in Buzzsprout without needing to do it in TrueFans. It goes to TrueFans and Fountain and other apps that have those recommendations. But if you're with a host that doesn't allow you to do that, you can do it with TrueFans. It'll only show up in TrueFans. And what I would suggest for that would be, you could go to that other show and say, by the way, I'm recommending your show because we are similar. Yeah. Maybe you'd like to recommend my show on your recommendations.
I do think podcast collaborations are one of the best ways to get an audience. Yeah.
Yeah. To finish off then, how can people connect with you and on spec?
Well, we've got Instagram, Twitter. We're less active on Twitter now. You can understand why.
Yeah.
But yeah, Instagram, it's at On Spec Podcast. On Twitter, it's On Spec Stories. And we've got a Facebook too. You can also email us at onspecpodcast@gmail.com.
You mentioned a mailing list as well.
Exactly. Thank you. We have a monthly newsletter that you can subscribe to. And I talk about what's new with OnSpec. I talk about my musings about what we're doing in the news and our co-founders and our contributors. And then we give a monthly shout out to our supporters, because we are very much into audience engagement. I love audience engagement.
Brilliant. People can sign up to that newsletter by visiting onspecpodcast.com. Thank you so much for speaking with me today, Fariba.
Thank you, Claire. It's been a pleasure.
You can hear more from that interview at the end of this episode of Creators, where Fariba describes how she and the team behind each season and story managed to make such high-quality, well-produced episodes, and how their work is funded.
That's absolutely right. Now, after our chat, Sam, I did think about payment splits, that it might be something useful to them because they work as a team. And I wondered if with payment splits that can be managed on an episode level. So if one episode has certain team members, can you manage payment splits episode by episode? And perhaps, Sam, this is also a good time for you to let the listeners know what I mean by payment splits.
Sure. So one of the lovely things about podcasting in TrueFans is that we allow creators to set up in their admin dashboard the host, or maybe a co-host, maybe a producer, maybe an editor. So at the podcast level, you could say these people are going to be receiving monies from any fan. So if I wanted to pay, let's say On Spec, and I give them £1 or 100 sats, then how does that money get divvied up? So what you do in your creator's dashboard is you put the name of the host or the creators, maybe the producer or editor, and you put 25%, 50%. It has to, of course, go to 100%. But what happens is then when somebody pays, I don't know, maybe a super comment or maybe they're streaming sats to them, we automatically send that money based on the splits that you've set up to those people. Now, that's at the podcast level. At the episode level, you can also do that. So in the same way, you go into the episode level in your creator's dashboard. You then put in the name, put in the amount. So what we do is we then go, right, four people at the podcast level were 100%, but now you've added the guest and you may say give them 10%, and you might have added a new staff member or podcast editor and they've got another 10%. We adjust the top podcast channel level. So that now becomes an 80% split and then 20% goes to the other people. So we automatically do this. So all you need to do as a creator is go in and set up the amount based on the percentage you want to give each person and we will do the rest for you and magically put it into each person's wallet.
Perfect. Brilliant for shows that have those team members that maybe vary from episode to episode. Oh, that's good. I learned something new again today.
It's also really good for music artists. We were talking to Ainsley Costello about a year ago. And, you know, can you imagine you're the singer, but you're also maybe the songwriter. You might have a studio producer. You might have a session guitarist or a session drummer. It's not part of the band all the time, but you just have them on that one track. So in the same way, you can have the main singer-songwriter, and then maybe on a single track, you might have a guest guitarist. And so, yes, it works in the same way.
Yeah, that's really useful. If you'd like to chat with us about your independent podcast or your music, send a comment or super comment in True Fans to any creator's episode by clicking on the speech bubble icon or on the comments tab.
So we've been collecting the questions that listeners have sent us in, Claire. What question are you going to ask me this week?
Well, it's one I keep getting asked, so I'm handing it over to you, Sam.
Right.
And that is, when will the True Fans native app be ready?
Oh, if I had a pound for every time that was asked, yes, I'd be a rich man. The good news is we've now submitted the apps to both Apple and Google in the app stores for review. So we have done all the work that's needed to get version 1.0 into the app stores. I hope, fingers crossed, it'll be this week. We will have those available. But of course, I can't determine what the reviewers and how long they will take, but it generally is somewhere between 48 hours and 1 week. That's great, exciting news. And I think the big difference is that people, when they go, oh, you're a PWA, progressive web app, web-based podcast app. Oh, I don't know, I was looking for you in the app stores and you weren't there. Realistically, the biggest thing they'll notice is we will be in the app stores. They will be able to click install as they would for any normal iOS or Android app. But also on the web page, things will change. Now you get a nice little banner at the top given to you, which automatically says click here and it installs the iOS or Android app for you automatically.
Brilliant. So you're going to get that prompt. Other than we can go to the app stores to get this app, and that's what people are used to doing with podcast apps, so that'll be easier for me when I'm telling people to listen on True Fans. Are there going to be any other benefits to listeners, podcasters, from the app being an app now?
Yes. Unfortunately, both Apple and Google hamstring web-based apps. They make them slower. They just don't give them the same sort of processing power. So when you go and become what's called a native app, which is basically using the App Store and then being approved by either Google or Apple, they give you the audio player access. They give you the offline capabilities. They give you all the things that you want. And they make it really quick and simple. So yes, we will see some benefits there for True Fans being a native app.
Perfect. I can't wait to have a play.
Now, I will temper it and say this is a 1.0 and I would love feedback because again, you know, when you build an app for the web and then you change it and build the app for the native phone, it does look and feel exactly the same. I've been playing with it for about 3 or 4 days myself. So far, I haven't noticed any differences in the UI, but there may be features and functions that I haven't thought about that are native to many other apps. People might want to give us feedback on or request a new feature for. So please do. We are all ears for them. So, Claire, time for the fan box. Have you heard from any listeners since the last episode?
We certainly have, Sam. First of all, we had a lovely comment from last week's guest podcaster, Joanna PR Neves, who I met in real life yesterday.
Nice.
She said, thanks so much for having me. It was a true pleasure. And I have to agree, it was a pleasure. Now, the next comment you'll see attached to this episode on True Fans is from fan zone Claire, which is me. And I wrote, this is the account that I, Claire Waite Brown, use when taking screenshots for fan zone episodes. Just popping on to show how easy it is to leave a comment. If you need some extra guidance, head to episode 10 of Fan Zone. So if you've not listened to this show before, Fan Zone is our sister podcast, and it's a series of short and sweet episodes that tell you what you can do with True Fans and how to do it. And then we've had another lovely comment from Jim James, who says, great to hear the true stories of indie podcasters being talked about so openly. Thanks, guys. Well, thank you, Jim. You know we love to connect with our independent podcasters and to show other people what's out there. If you would like to leave us a comment, it's very easy to do when you're listening to this episode. You can click on the tab that says comments or click on the speech bubble and write your comment. And if you wish to, you can turn it into a super comment by attaching a small payment. Thank you. Sam, have you spotted anything this week that independent creators and their fans might also want to know about?
Well, one idea that's floating around this week, and I thought it was worth talking to you about and see whether you thought it was a good idea. Russell Harrower from Pod 2 said, wouldn't it be good if we had a Shazam for podcasting? Now, first of all, I've got to ask you, do you know what Shazam is?
I do know what Shazam is. It was one of the earliest things you could do with your smartphone.
Yeah, you could put your phone up, listen to any track that was playing in the background, and it would magically find that track for you and play it back on your phone. Because it was so good, Apple bought the company and now it's part of the Mac OS. So when Russell said, wouldn't it be good to have a Shazam for podcasting? I was like, well, what would that do? I mean, there's no point telling me what the podcast is because I've got it on my phone. I'm listening to the podcast. I've got a cover art. I don't need a Shazam to tell me what I'm looking at. So we had a little brainstorm, and the idea might be that actually I might be listening to, I don't know, another podcast. I know it's Claire Waite Brown, or maybe I don't know the guest. Maybe I don't know the co-host. And so what it could do is then listen to the people's voices and then tell me in the app, oh yes, Claire Waite Brown is the host of the one I'm listening to. But you know, she's got Creativity Fan and she does Fan Zone and she does these other ones as well, by the way. Or it could be, by the way, do you know Claire's been on this podcast as a guest or that podcast as a guest? Oh, right, I like Claire. I'm going to go and find that podcast. Here's the link to it. Bang. And so you could turn the Shazam for podcasting into a playlist of all of the other podcasts that the current host that you're listening to is actually either a host of another podcast or a guest on another podcast.
Right. So do you envisage that this would pop up? So if I start listening to creators from True Fans, something would pop up on the screen to say, featured in this episode are Sam Sethi, Claire Waite Brown and Fariba Noir, who you can also find in these places. Okay.
Yes.
Well, it can't do any harm, can it? It's another form of discovery. I am thinking, reminded of the person tag and the pod role feature, which can do a similar thing, but I don't know.
Yeah, it was really, we're an audio medium and are we using the audio itself? Because if you think of the person tag, that is being added by the creator themselves, the podcaster. The pod role is being added by the creator, so it's a physical entity. But actually, can we use the audio? A bit like the transcript. Now, we could use the transcript, for example, to do a search. We can now find other speakers called Claire Waite Brown and other speakers called Sam by going through every other transcript. That's one way of doing it. And that's quite difficult as well. It's just an idea, as I said, whether people think it's a good one or a bad one. We'd love comments if you think it's good or comments if you think it's bad. No one's building it right now, but it was just such an interesting idea. Does the audio fingerprint of someone's voice become unique enough so that they could be discovered for other podcasts and then connected together to sort of create a social graph of your podcasting history?
Okay. Yeah, I'll have a think. Do hit that comment tab or that speech bubble and interact with us. Let us know what you think.
Now, one of the other ideas that's floating around, people have been talking about the move more towards putting podcasts behind paywalls. Podcasting, I've said, has been the second-class citizen of digital content. You know, back in the day, Claire, you might have had Napster and you downloaded free music, right, as best you could. And it was a poor experience, really, if we cast our minds back. And then Steve Jobs came along and said, well, it's 99 cents. Everyone, oh, okay, for that, I can't be bothered to wait 6 hours for that download of that one single. So now people were paying for music. And then we got people to pay for films. And now we happily have Netflix or Prime or Apple TV. But podcasting is still seen as a free medium, ad-supported in some cases, but a free medium for access. But more and more, the trend is now to put that content, if it's quality and you believe that your fans will pay for it, behind a paywall of some sort. So Patreon or Buy Me a Coffee, or in True Fans, you can have a support option. So more and more people are saying, yeah, you know what? I think what I do each week's pretty good. And each week it takes me some time. It could be 1 hour, 3 hours. We've all had to go through the recording, editing, promoting stages. And actually, yeah, if you like what I'm putting out, maybe you want to give me a few sats, or maybe you want to give me a monthly recurring subscription. And what that also means is that listeners, fans, don't want ads. They go, okay, well, if I'm paying for this, I want an ad-free version. This has brought up a really interesting problem for the advertising industry, because people who can afford to pay for ad-free TV films do it. I pay for my subscription to Netflix or Prime or Apple TV and I don't get ads. People can afford to pay for no ads, they will. So are advertisers targeting people who can't afford it? And are they the people that advertisers want to reach? It's a dilemma, hey, Claire?
It is, yeah. It's a very interesting one. From the creator's point of view, I wonder how putting your work behind a paywall would affect discovery, because you're relying on the people who already know you to pay. I certainly know a lot of independent podcasters who want their work to be available openly. I was speaking with Joanna recently and she said, I want my art teachings to be open for everyone. So that is a kind of ethical element to it that I wonder about.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with a lot. There is a technology that's been produced partly by me and partly by Russell and partly by Oscar. It's called Secure RSS. And I'm not going to get into the technicalities here, but what it allows you as a creator to do is to say, okay, these episodes are going to be free. In the same feed, I can then say, these two or three episodes are chargeable and this is how much I want. And equally, you could actually go down to the chapter level soon and be able to say, actually, all this episode is free, bar this one chapter or two chapters, right? So what it means to you as a creator is you can choose what's open, freemium, you know, not paid for, and what is paid for in the same feed, in the same app. So you're not sending your fans to another app to go and subscribe. You're not having to upload your premium content to another app. So now you can keep your one feed with both freemium and premium and keep your fans in the same app that they want to use, and it can be freely distributed and the apps will determine what you've asked for. I want these all to be free, but that last episode is going to be chargeable.
Yeah, that makes the most sense to me.
And I think when that comes about, and it will do in the latter half of this year, I think you'll start to see people going, well, why am I putting it over on Patreon or Memberful? Why am I splitting my fan base and why am I doubling up my work? So as a creator, I think just keep an eye out, have a think about why you could actually get your fans now to pay you directly. I think creating fandoms is critical and monetizing those without advertising.
And that's what we would like people to do. And we would like our listeners to financially support our shows, even in very little ways. It makes all the difference to us as creators.
I think if you've got 50, 100, 200 people who listen to your show regularly and they all gave you 50p, that would be amazing.
I would be happy.
No, I think it's beholden to apps like TrueFans and others to make payment easy so that users then go, oh, that's easy to give Claire 50p or 1,000 sats. So I think that's where we are trying to get to as an industry, where you go, I'd love to give you a heart, a thumb, a like, but I'm going to give it with a little bit of micro payment. And in the aggregate, if you've got a fan base, that will actually pay you more than the advertising CPM rates that you might get, because you have to get thousands of fans. So you might only be having 100 or 50 fans, but you could still make more money than the advertising if you had 10x the number of people listening.
Yeah, I love the practical element of obviously what you're doing with True Fans, what Oscar at Fountain, and generally the 2.0 features. That's perfect if we can make it easy for people to do it. The next step is the mindset of the people so that they do actually do it.
Yeah, I think sites like Patreon and Memberful and Buy Me a Coffee have helped people understand. I'd even add in, you know, Substack. I'd even add in, you know, other subscription-based models. So people are beginning to say, yeah, actually, yeah, paying for this content seems fair, but now let's make it easier to pay and make it simpler for creators as well.
Yeah.
So that's where we're going. Now, talking about things that creators should be doing and trends, Pocket Cast, again, another big podcasting 2.0 app. They added support for pod roles, Claire, you'll be very happy to say.
Yes. My favourite.
TrueFan supports pod roles. Buzzsprout supports pod roles as a host. But pod roles are simply a way of you as a creator putting a list of other podcasts that you recommend. So it's lovely that you don't have algorithmic recommendation engines. This is bottom-up recommendations from creators to other creators. And I think it's lovely that that now is supported in Pocket Cast as well.
Yes, it is. I was very happy to read that. As you know, I mentioned Podroll to Fariba because I think that could be a good thing for her show. And the Pocket Cast thing is that they do take your Podroll if you've put them in. But if you haven't put them in, they do make recommendations of their own, don't they?
They do, and that's an algorithmic recommendation. Mm. So I think you've got my recommendations as a creator and then the app recommendations as an algorithm.
Yeah, it's made clear on the app whose the recommendations are. Yeah, no, it's super. You know me, I love podcasters recommending other podcasts and, as you say, getting away from the algorithmic recommendations and getting real recommendations that you can trust.
Mm. And one other big story that's happening in the podcasting world is that Spotify have opened the closed door. They've adopted a podcasting 2.0 tag, one of the open tags. They've supported transcripts, Claire.
It's fabulous. Yeah. I have been talking with the people that I interview for this show, and transcripts is kind of like the first one. If people don't know about 2.0 features, it's one that they have heard of. But how does it work with Spotify? Are we talking about the 2.0 feature, or are they doing it like Apple do and making it themselves?
What's happened is that if you've got a host that supports transcripts like Buzzsprout or Blueberry or Transistor, you can then get your transcript put into your host. That gets put into your feed, your RSS feed, and then native apps like TrueFans or Pocket Cast or Fountain will read that transcript and display it alongside the episode show notes. And that's great. And it's great for SEO. It's great for searching. It's great for many other things. If you're somebody who is slightly hard of hearing, again, it's great for following along. But finally, Spotify are going to read your RSS feed and look for the podcasting 2.0 tag for transcriptions. And if it finds it, it will put that in as the default transcription. So, like Apple, you will be able to get a transcription directly from Spotify if you don't have your own transcription. But if they find one that you've put in yourself, it'll override the one that's native to the platform. And that's exactly what happens with Apple as well.
Well, it does, Sam, but only if you've done the toggle that says, I want you to take the 2.0
Yes, and
transcript.
And I can't tell you 100% what it looks like in Spotify because I haven't gone into it. And I'm assuming it may be exactly the same, doing exactly the same thing. But the good news at the macro level is that Spotify have added the podcasting 2.0 namespace and added the first tag. Fingers crossed, they will add more tags. That's what we want. We want Apple to add more tags. We want other apps to add more tags. It just means that everyone is then on a uniform platform, and those tags for creators are great because if you've taken the time to add the person tag to your host, but it doesn't appear in Spotify or it doesn't appear in Apple, your listeners go, oh, it's not there. Or creators will go back to Buzzsprout and go, oh, I did all the work, but it doesn't appear. Right. Yes, it will appear in TrueFans. Yes, it will appear in other 2.0 apps. But again, I think once it starts to appear in other ones, so the low hanging fruit we call person tags, chapters, transcripts, pod roles. I think all creators should be doing those now. I don't think there's any excuse for not doing them.
Yeah. Future proofing. It's my advice to do. And especially if your host allows you to do it as Buzzsprout does. Do all of them. As you know, I was spoilt. I thought all the hosting companies did all of them because Buzzsprout does, but it's super easy to do, but it also gives you control. So for example, with your transcript, you can correct your transcript. You can make sure everybody's names are spelled correctly. You can make sure a work of art is named correctly and you have complete control, which is what we want. We want control of our content, whether it's audio or the accompanying transcript or the accompanying chapters. But it is absolutely very exciting news, Sam. Mm.
And then, Claire, where have you been this week? You've been out and about.
I have. I've been schmoozing with podcasty people. I went to the International Women's Podcast Awards. So last week on this show, I mentioned some of the independent podcasts that were shortlisted for the IWPAs and celebrated them because it's not an easy task to get that far. And last week, I went to the ceremony, which was super. So I got to meet people that I already know, but also some people that I mentioned on the show last week. These people are Elizabeth from the Adult Ballet Studio, and she had come over from the States. It was lovely to meet Elizabeth. I met Anna, who is my friend who does the Story of Woman. And I met Charlotte from The Cancer Caregiver and Siobhan from Retirement Rebel. I also met Nikki Elliott from a show called Women's Business. I met her in the queue for the loo. It's where women meet each other. Nikki Elliott, I didn't mention her show last week. It's called Women's Business, and she was also shortlisted. And I want to say really, really well done to the shows that did make it to the runner-up and the winning position. So Retirement Rebel and Made for Us were runners-up in their category, which is amazing. And Blue Mondays and Tales from the Singing Porch and Two Lives, they won in their categories as well. So that was really super to see. I'm going to put some photos in the chapters of the people that I met.
I think one of the things that you and I have been discussing as well, Claire, is how can we help promote these shows and these hosts? So one of the things that we're going to be doing on TrueFans is taking away, I suppose, the big names from the top page, you know, the Joe Rogans or the Michelle Obamas, and featuring some of these shows. I think we want to champion, which is why we do this show, Claire. And again, I think as the CEO of True Fans and you nudging me nicely, I think we will promote the shows we mention each week. So if you're listening to this show and you go, oh, what was that one again? Well, I'm sure it'll be in our show notes. But if you can't find it in the show notes, you can go to the homepage and it'll be there in the top header. But also, we're going to be building in a carousel of independent podcast creators as well. So bear with us while we build that, but we are intending and will do very shortly to start to promote all the people we mention in this show.
Yeah, it's going to be lovely to be able to go to a podcast app and see your show on the front page. Brilliant. Love it. It was my idea. Of course, I love it.
Yes. And that's it for this week, Claire. Our audio is recorded and edited using Riverside and we're hosted by our friends at Buzzsprout.
We sure are. Remember, you can support this show by streaming micropayments from your True Fans wallet, or you can leave us a super comment, or you can become a monthly supporter.
If you'd like to advertise or sponsor this show, please email sam@truefans.fm for further details.
And don't forget, you can find out more about the fun features that are part of True Fans by listening to our sister podcast, Fan Zone. And if you're keen to learn more about podcasting 2.0 in general, do check out my course-based podcast called Podcasting 2.0 in Practice.
And you never know, by next week, Claire, there might be a native iOS and Android app.
Yes, 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 yes. Crossing my fingers.
Not as much as me.
Don't forget, you can keep listening to hear more from this episode's featured creator.
Well, I'm curious, which episodes did you listen to?
While I was on holiday, I listened to the first few Lethal Descent. Okay. So I got up to the poet.
You did? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Funny enough, I was listening to those in the bathroom when I was getting ready every morning on holiday in this happy place.
I'm sorry. Yes. But anyway. Yeah. Check yourself. Check your emotional bandwidth. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then I've recently listened to the one about the tribes and in Africa, and the Q&A episode after the main episode as well.
That was our most popular episode, and we were really perplexed by that.
Yeah.
I think it's a solution, like it was a happy one, right? That one is a happy one. And I think that it's called Tribe and Prejudice. It's from Zambia. Yeah, people really connected with that. Yeah. And we kind of never know what's going to be popular, what's not. It's hard to predict.
That's really interesting. So it's not necessarily a matter of everybody listens to every episode is what you're saying then.
We have different audience members coming in. I mean, at one point, the analytics were telling us, I don't know how accurate they are from Spotify, that Saudi Arabia was one of our biggest listeners because you have a lot of English speakers there who don't want to listen to legacy media but do want documentaries.
The episodes that I've listened to are not only very interesting, and as you've already explained, stories that I may not ordinarily come across, which is brilliant, but also very beautifully produced with the interviews, with the, you know, soundscaping and stuff like that. So quality-wise, it's brilliant. So I'm still grappling with then, when you're training the journalists, do they then deliver the whole product, the whole episode? You're shaking your head.
I will. No. So like I said, it takes a big team, and podcasting, as you know, has so many layers, especially this kind of production. Yes, I hear that a lot from people who are like, wow, we didn't know it was such high. It's like BBC and NPR quality production. How do you guys do this? Well, we work with professionals. We produce a team for each season. We create a team that will work on that season based on the funding that we have. And we don't do things hourly, not generally. We did with Lethal Descent and I made no money. That was a mistake. But generally, it's project-based. You're going to work on this project for this long until it's finished. You get half of the money now, half until it's finished. And then we work across the globe, which sometimes is very challenging remotely. So we had somebody in the DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo, who disappeared on us in the middle of his story. So he had done the reporting. I fact-checked it. And then we had to find someone else to voice it and pay them separately. So because we're remote, we do have a lot of challenges, but we've learned to troubleshoot ahead of time. And I'm proud of the episodes we've done and the training. But when these reporters come to me and they've never done long form audio, they get frustrated by the amount of edits and time that it takes because they're used to like 3-minute radio stories that they've done. Nobody comes to me with no experience. We don't take people with no experience. You have to have some experience in audio or a massive experience in print for me to work with you, because I'm not going to teach 101 journalism. We're a bit too advanced for that. But by the time they get to the end of the story and they hear the complete production, the different layers, which involves music, voiceovers, you know, we have artwork, we have our own graphic designer who does for each episode creates artwork, and then social media videos. They are so proud. Like each reporter, when they listen to their final story and I see the pride they have, then it makes it all worth it, because there's a lot of hours that go into this for very little money or no money, right? It's a passion in many ways for a lot of these reporters, and then for those of us who are training them.
Yeah.
First, we apply for funding. We've been able to get a lot of small grants from big media. Let's put it that way. National Geographic, European Journalism Center, Google, PRX, and then smaller outlets. The Pulitzer Center gave us one. So, and then donors coming in. So we have what are they called? A diversity of revenues in order to do the stories that we do, Claire. Our stories are not cheap, right? So because it's investigative reporting and storytelling,